All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, November 11th. Coming up this hour, Mark Jacob and special guest sportscaster, UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher. We will not have live shows Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We'll have best of for that post-election rehab that all of us need in this business in one form or another. To reach us, 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Quick reminder, we're coming up on the holiday season, and that means the Salvation Army Red Kettle Drive is about to begin. That will be the focus of the halftime show for one of the Thanksgiving football games, and that, you know, that and a lot of other worthy groups, service groups, charities could use your help coming into this holiday season. I want to talk a bit about the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which happened 47 years ago this week. So I'm going to try to make some time for that in just a sec. But first, I wanted to make note of all of the various post-election commentaries and data sets that are out there. And one of them is a map that's been put out by Ari Brown, who does data and research for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. It's a county-by-county map showing the change between 2018, when Governor Evers won his first term, versus this week when he was reelected. Now, the first thing that I noticed being in the western side of the state up here on Lake Wissota is a lot of the counties in our area were some shade of red, meaning they voted in a heavier proportion for Tim Michaels than they did 4 years ago. So Republicans got a larger share of the vote compared to 4 years ago. What I should have taken notice of, and it took a minute for me to get to it, was to notice what was happening in the center and the eastern parts of this map. And that there should really be credit given to all kinds of folks. We've talked to people in Brown County and in Door County who've been working hard on the ground. I saw notes about this map from people up north in Oneida and Vilas County, the people who knocked on doors, who did the phone banking, who did the canvassing to turn those counties blue, which didn't necessarily mean that Evers won a majority in those counties, but that he improved on his share of the vote compared to 4 years ago. But let's also not forget that in those areas were a whole lot of billboards that were purchased through the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC, Kirk Bankstead and friends, over the months and years even, of reminding people about the stakes and the issues and the things that are important. And so, you know, big thanks to Kirk. And, you know, Kirk then pointed out that, you know, Marathon County is one of those places that is shaded in blue now, where Evers improved his vote percentage, and that there's a little place called Bull Falls Radio that started providing a counter to the toxic content that's been pouring out of local radio across Wisconsin, including in the Marathon County area. So anything that we could have provided to help inform people, help them hear something a little bit more fact-based, shall we say, we're very happy to have played a role in that as well. So again, everybody who came together, deserves credit for making sure that Governor Evers and his veto pen remain a check on an otherwise gerrymandered Republican legislature. All right. The one of the more interesting things I was reading at 4 o'clock this morning was a Twitter thread put out by Etta McVean. And she is a freelance science communicator who wanted to write a few things about the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which took place this week in 1975, as we noted a couple of days ago. Everybody is familiar with the Gordon Lightfoot song. Well, unless you're below a certain age, and then you should listen. It's haunting. It's poetic. And the thread includes a couple of things that were not exactly accurate, but a little artistic license was taken, but that Gordon Lightfoot felt so strongly about wanting the song to be more factually correct that he's actually changed the way that he has sung some of the lyrics. And Now, again, Ada McVean, her Twitter is at Ada, is A-D-A-M-C-V-E-A-N. And in there, all kinds of background about the Edmund Fitzgerald itself, why it was so big when it was launched in 1958, built to be the maximum size for the new St. Lawrence Seaway. I did not know where the name come from. It was Edmund Fitzgerald was the name of the president of Northwestern Mutual, the company that commissioned her building. Talked about the typical routes, what she carried, the captain who was known for being cautious. And so when a surprise storm came up, other captains took note when he said that he was going to take shelter, you know, near an island. Talked about these waves reaching, rogue waves were getting as high as 35 feet. And then eventually radio contact was lost. No crew members were ever found, just some debris. And then the thread goes on to say about how, you know, she hadn't left fully loaded for Cleveland, but Cleveland sounded better than Zug Island, which was where it was really going. And then there was a line about the main hatchway caving in, and that implied that there might have been some crew error. And so he changed it to it grew dark, it was then. And finally, the Mariners Church in Detroit, that's the actual name of it, is no longer called Musty. It's called a rustic old hall. Anyway, take a look at this thread. It's beautiful, and happy just to pass along a bit of the story. We'll be back. You're up north.
When supper time came, the old cook came on deck saying, fellas, it's too rough to feed you.
On this Friday night, state semifinals for high school football. I know we're going to talk more sports with Dan Schumacher about a half hour from now or so, but I know we won't have time to get through all the games, and so I really wanted to give a shout-out to all the teams, let you know where they're playing. Maybe it's a school that you know and love, or maybe they're playing in a neutral site that's near you, and you'd like to go see it. So, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to inhale deeply and give you all the divisions and the games coming up, all of them tonight, 7 o'clock, it says here on the WIAA website. In Division 1, it'll be Bayport versus Kimberly at Menasha, and Hamilton versus Mukwonago at the West Allis Athletic Complex. In Division 2, West De Pere versus Kekana at Ashwaubenon, and Kettle Moraine versus Brookfield Central at Waukesha West. In Division 3, Onalaska versus West Salem at La Crosse Logan, and Monroe versus New Berlin West at Bigfoot. In Division 4, Columbus versus Freedom at Ripon, and Catholic Memorial versus Two Rivers at Slinger. In Division 5, Aquinas versus Kewaunee at Wisconsin Rapids Lincoln, and Prairie du Chien versus Mayville at McFarland. In Division 6, Perennial Stratford versus St. Mary Springs at Waupaca, and Mondovi versus Darlington at Wisconsin Dells. And finally, in Division 7, Regis versus Bangor at Arcadia, and Cashton versus Shiocton at Marshfield. So there you go. We're getting near the very end of the state high school football playoffs. I am going to read a bit from the latest post-election analysis from the great Craig Gilbert at the Journal Sentinel. And in doing so, I say again, not just out of obligation because I'm reading something that's behind a paywall, but because I really, really, really want you to subscribe to the Journal Sentinel and read what all of these great reporters are providing for you. So consider this more of a tease and a commercial, more than giving away the whole article. But it won't surprise you to learn that Craig Gilbert has once again done a very comprehensive job of looking at the numbers and talking about strengths and weaknesses. He notes that Republicans continue to lose ground in the populous metro areas of Madison, Milwaukee, while Democrats continue to slip in the state's more rural northern and western halves. There was simply a widening of the density divide as the bigger cities and inner suburbs keep getting bluer, while the exurbs and the small towns in the countryside keep getting redder. We've already talked about how Evers won by about 3 points compared to about 1 point over Scott Walker 4 years ago. In the Senate race, Republican Ron Johnson saw his margins deteriorate, but hung on to win a closer than expected victory over Mandela Barnes with a margin of less than 30,000 votes. In the suburban Republican county of Waukesha, Republicans won for governor by around 46,000 votes. But compare that to an edge of almost 75,000 votes in 2018 and 93,000 votes of the margin in 2014. That's a big decline over the past couple of years. And thanks to suburban inroads, Democrats won the 10-county Milwaukee media market for the first time in a governor's race in 40 years. This appears to be the closest pair of Senate and gubernatorial races on the same ballot in Wisconsin history, dating back to 1914. It's the first time since 1990 that the party of the sitting president has won the governor's race in Wisconsin, and that was with a Republican. The last time that happened with a Democrat in the White House and a Democratic governor winning re-election was 1962. And this is also the first time since 1998 Wisconsin has seen a split outcome at the top of the ticket, one way for Senate, the other way for president or governor, again reflecting the absence of a partisan wave in the midterms. The state continues to have a 50-50 partisan makeup. Dane County continues to generate bigger Democratic margins. Evers won Dane County by a margin of 79-21. That compares to 75% that he got in Dane County last time around. But as we mentioned yesterday, in the city of Milwaukee, turnout was down significantly from 2018, although Evers won Milwaukee County as a whole by a bigger raw vote margin compared to 4 years ago. In the Senate race, Johnson's deficit in Milwaukee County grew. The deficit was just under 30 points 6 years ago, and now it's just about 40 points this time around. But even more importantly, Craig Gilbert writes, Democrats reduced their losing margins in Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington counties. Evers lost Waukesha County 4 years ago by 34 points, but this week he lost Waukesha County by only 20 points. And then Craig goes on to talk about the Fox Valley, another population center where the GOP also lost some ground, but Democrats also continue to lose ground in the smaller counties. Ron Johnson actually improved his share of the vote in a majority of Wisconsin counties. His margins grew by 10 points or more in more than 20 counties in the state. It's just that Johnson's gains in a lot of smaller counties were outweighed by his losses in a handful of bigger counties, and that's why he had a much, much narrow victory compared to 2016. And again, there's so much more there that Craig Gilbert has. He is now a fellow with Marquette University Law School's Center for Public Policy Research and Civic Education before reporting on politics for 35 years at the Journal Sentinel. So I highly recommend you going there and reading the latest on what he says about it. So again, many reasons why this happened. And as I said in the last segment, it happened not just because of the candidates, not just because of the campaigns, not just because of the state party, not just because of the outside independent group spending on TV, but the boots on the ground by volunteers and by groups that did everything from put up billboards to start programming on radio stations that take phone calls, much like Wisco Paul here is calling in to talk about as well. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for your show, by the way. I get the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel online and it's relatively cheap. Embrace the boys are really good at what they do. But mostly I want to thank your radio station. The radio does make a difference. It comes with all the other stuff like boots on the ground and flyers and stuff. And you and Kurt Banks have done one heck of a job. But the Democrats have never realized, I don't think, the power of radio. People drive around in their cars. Rural people drive around in their trucks. And it is a very important tool, and they've never grasped that. And this is going to really, really help. Because when it comes right down to it, I can't think of anything Republicans do for rural, rural Americans in general. I mean, the Democrats just give you a Social Security rate. made the drug costs cheaper. There's a lot of older people that live in rural Wisconsin, but mostly I want to give you guys a pat on the back in your election coverage. Was just you guys just hit that ball out of the park on that one. It's just really cool. I used to do a lot more driving. I only drive a couple days a week this now, but to have you guys in the radio is really cool. So you're Kurt, kudos, and then I'll quit rambling on here. So thanks, Pat. Have a good day.
Hey, Paul, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And like I said, I was texting back and forth with Kirk yesterday, talking about what, you know, how this all came together, that there was still obviously a lot of work to do. And, when you look at the places where Democrats fell short, whether it was Mandela Barnes or Brad Paff in the 3rd Congressional District, there is plenty of time for navel gazing. There's plenty of time for blame. And there should be some, ranging from everything, again, from what the candidates and campaigns did to what outside groups did or did not do. And there are news articles yesterday. There will be news articles today talking about Wisconsin Democratic fury. And I don't think I'm overstating that at national groups that basically wrote off the 3rd Congressional District and, you know, assumed that it was lost, even though you had a Republican candidate with such a terrible track record and with the potential to truly be our own Marjorie Taylor Greene here. And yet, much like many other rural districts across the United States, the Democratic Party is still not doing nearly as much as it could. It's trying too hard to defend, you know, weak candidates in other districts. And even the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, you know, lost its leader, Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney from New York. When the chair of your campaign committee loses his seat in Congress, you know, that's where resources had to go to try to prop him up, even as they were not playing in districts that they could have won. Brad Paff losing by just a 52-48 margin. Now, there may be a lot of things that went into that decision. Ron Kind held that seat for 26 years. He did it as essentially a blue dog Democrat, meaning that he was very proud of his bipartisan record, but it also frustrated a lot of other Democrats when he took some votes that, you know, that they weren't fond of. That could have sent a message to, you know, folks at the national level that, you know, maybe that district isn't so purple if you need somebody taking the kind of votes that Kind did. Maybe it's a district that you do write off to Republicans. A lot of us didn't agree with that. But I'm just saying that may have been a factor in the decision making as well. And of course, when we're talking about these seats for the legislature, again, you're left with asking, how much do you put in to a rigged map? And the only answer you can offer at this point is simply to work that much harder. Lou Anne Bird came within 500 votes of winning a district, you know, that that was queued against her. Jeff Smith, who I had lunch with yesterday, again, he won by fewer than 700 votes. But both he and his opponent, who was also at the insurrection, got more than 38,000 votes apiece. But Jeff got about 700 more. And the difference, as I noted in my article on our website, is that he had those conversations with people, Republican and Democrat, along the side of the road, and definitely had more than 700 conversations. And so it was those conversations that did it. So you're not going to do it with outside money alone. You've got to work as hard as Lou Anne Bird did. You've got to work as hard as Jeff Smith did. You got to work as hard as Katrina Shanklin did. Now, even if you work hard, if you work as hard as Kelly Westland did up in the northwest corner of the state, that still may not be enough without folks helping from the outside. There are so many moving pieces to an election. And even after you look at the numbers that Craig Gilbert gives us, and you look at all of the spending on the ads and everything else, all of those moving pieces tell you not to take any one of them for granted, and that the work for the next time around starts right now. This radio station isn't going anyplace. Civic Media was founded in part to provide a year-round home where people could hear about politics and policy and news that wasn't, you know, dragged through whatever it is that the right wing does before they send it out hither and yon. The same goes for Up North News and Courier Newsroom, founded for the same reasons. I'm very fortunate to work in both, and I'm not going anywhere. And neither should these folks who came up short in their elections this year. Hope they stay involved, and you're going to hear from them right here as often as we possibly can. We will take a break, talk to Mark Jacob next, and then Dan Schumacher with sports later in the next half hour. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Welcome back. It's Friday morning here on Up North News Radio, and we are talking live with our friend Mark Jacob, a former editor for the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, who enjoys as much as I do watching the media coverage of politics and campaigns and other news. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong to say we enjoy it. We enjoy commenting on it, a lot of the shortcomings. And we, you know, we hand out, you know, blue ribbons as they're deserved. But, you know, as you noted the day after the election, Mark, you said when news media predicts a red wave and it doesn't happen, they describe it as a surprise or defying expectations and hope that you don't realize they're the ones who are surprised and had wrong-headed expectations. And it really is, Mark, about that expectations game, because there was a time during the summer, I forget exactly when, but it was like, wow, Biden and the Democrats, they've really overcome all these challenges and they're going to do well. And I thought, well, that's some weird candor from the national media. But pretty soon after that, the narrative went back to red wave. And what we've really learned, Mark, is they don't really know.
No, they don't know, but they have to say something anyway. You know, it's one of those, you know, there's a lot of airtime to fill. So and the interesting thing is they have to change the narrative. I mean, if they were consistently, well, the Democrats are going to do fairly well, or that there's going to be a red wave, then they wouldn't have a storyline for the next week and the next week and the next week. So it's got to move all over the place, you know, based on the polls. And I mean, the real problem to me is not the polls per se. The polls, way I understand it, the polls per se were generally about 3% wrong, 3 percentage points wrong toward the Republicans. All right. So, you know, polls in today's world, polls are going to be tough to do because, you know, people don't pick up the phone and they, you know, there's a lot of reaching people. It's not like, you know, it's not like everyone's got a phone in their kitchen and they'll pick it up as they're cooking dinner. And so it's tough to poll, clearly. And so to me, the polls aren't the problem as much as the over-reliance on the polls and the bizarre interpretation of the polls, and frankly, the lack of skepticism of the polls. Because when news media, and I have personal experience of this, because I used to, when I was at the Tribune and the Sun-Times, I would deal with polls. And we would sometimes see results that we thought, you know, that can't be right, or that's really unlikely to be right, or that's an outlier. You know, and then we're in a funny position because we've just paid a bunch of money for the poll, and we have to report it, because if you didn't report it, that would be wrong too. I mean, anyway. So you're in a funny position.
And you look at again, not to pick on just one, but it's the one we hear of most often in Wisconsin, the Marquette poll. At one point, had Mandela Barnes up about 6, and then like a month later, had Ron Johnson up by 6, and we knew neither one of those was going to be true. So you have to ask yourself, what is the value in even reporting that? You can't ignore it, but boy, you sure better throw that kind of perspective on it.
Right. And you shouldn't spend your whole time talking about it. I mean, that shouldn't be like the entire focus of what you're talking about. And, you know, I listened to a lot of cable TV, you know, news shows, and that was pretty much all they talked about. And I guess I don't have as much of a problem with non-horse race polls. You know, if you're in a poll, you know, with the most important issue, although those can be really skewed too, based on whatever, you know, like the looking at, and I'm not saying crime is not an issue, but clearly the Republicans ginned up that issue as a giant thing. nationwide. I mean, there must have been a memo that went out that said, you know, this is going to be your issue. You got to call your opponents, you know, soft on crime, or they hate the police, or they want to use the phrase defund the police a lot, even though nobody's defunding the police. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so that made that into an issue. But so, but in general, polls didn't want to talk about, you know, what people care about, the issues, you know, that I don't have any problem with that. I mean, because that's actually getting on the issues, not just, you know, who's ahead, who's behind. By the way, I was in Wisconsin a couple days just before the election, and those ads against Mandela Barnes were unbelievable. Those, you know, Mandela Barnes hates the police. He's, you know, he's Mr. Crime. I mean, it was, I just thought it was just a gigantic smear with racist overtones.
Oh, huge. And I only learned yesterday through a Dan Bice column in the Journal Sentinel that one of Johnson's general consultants was one of the guys behind the Swift Boat ads of 2004 against John Kerry. So it makes perfect sense now that that's exactly what was going on, which, again, despicable as it is, doesn't mean we take, you know, all of the, you know, responsibility off of the candidate and the campaign right to respond to it. But let's at least establish for the public, you know, the base of something like this that is on par with Willie Horton or Lewis Butler being unseated from the state Supreme Court a few years back by Michael Gableman, and, you know, call it out for what it is.
Right. I mean, they always use that, and they just tend to use that issue against black candidates too.
It's exactly. My other bugaboo with polling, though, is it's one thing to do horse race on the candidates, but even on the issues, I have to say, I still take exception to, like, when they ask right track, wrong track, and people say wrong track. Right. Well, they don't break down to, is it on the wrong track because of, you know, you don't like Biden, or is it on the wrong track because you think the Republicans are obstructing Biden? And the same with democracy. The Marquette poll refers to it as election accuracy, when I think you can either be concerned because you think the election is rigged, or you can be concerned because you think people are lying, you know, about the election. And the same goes with gun safety versus gun violence versus gun control. I think all of these are, I just find them less useful all the time.
Yeah, well, it obviously, you could, how you ask the question is how you get your answer, and they know that. I just feel like that one of the big losers in this election was the media, and it's because I would, you know, I don't really need to know what the latest poll shows about whether Mandela Barnes is up or down by 2 or 3 points, you know, a month before the election. You know what I'd really like to know is what Mandela Barnes, how his feelings are about healthcare and about, you know, Medicaid and about, you know, various things, school choice, you know, all the issues that are at the real issues, you know, how are we going to, you know, lower the price of insulin?
And that's just state and national media. When you take it to the local level, now I have to caution by saying I have not talked to the folks here in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the media here. But again, I heard from two different candidates that there was no media at their election night watch parties. It used to be everybody was there, the TV stations, the newspapers, no media was there, and that no media called them the next day to do an interview, you know, post-election, because I think, again, from what I remember from my TV days, the consultants want you to talk about anything but politics and to move on. And that is like the last thing you want if you're actually engaged in public service.
Well, you know, and here in the Chicago area, you know, I was looking at the nightly news. Sometimes I do that, although I sometimes ask myself why, but they were making so much money off these campaign ads. And I was thinking, I'm watching these, you know, all this, you know, Pritzker's terrible, the other guy's terrible, everyone's terrible, you know, and all this, you know, with these deep voices, they're going to steal your freedom, that kind of, you know, stuff. And, you know, they're making, I'm thinking, boy, the TV stations are sure making a lot of money off these ads, yet the TV news is not covering the issues. I mean, so you leave the commercial, you go back to the news, and it's all this kind of, you know, it bleeds, it leads stuff, you know, where's the latest car crash, latest house fire, where did somebody shoot somebody? And none of this, like, you know, really smart, sophisticated, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to spend the next 5 minutes explaining what the differences are between the Republican and Democratic candidates for the Senate on a host of issues. Please pay attention. I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, isn't that what public service for a news media organization is? I mean, I mean, but and again, Pat, this sounds like a revolutionary idea because it's never done. I mean, it's, to me, it's the most basic thing in the world, but it sounds like, what a wacky idea. Talk about where the candidates stand on the issues. What a crazy idea.
So old school, just so very quaint, you know. We will talk about a couple of the different states here that frustrate us, like Ohio and Georgia, but let's at least start on the positive side. You said it very directly. You simply said Michigan went from purple to blue.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, and as I've said on the show before, I'm not a Democrat. I've considered myself an independent who's an anti-fascist. So I just don't want right-wing, you know, crazy people. And Michigan, the thing in Michigan, the Republicans were whack jobs. They were completely, you know, out of their minds. You know, you had like a Secretary of State candidate, Karamo, who, you know, who opposes cohabitation of couples and thinks that there are satanic influences and among Democrats, and I mean, really out of her darn mind. And so it's not surprising when you have like kind of rational leadership like Whitmer that they're going to win. And I'm not like, you know, no, Pat, the thing about this era is I'm not in favor of a one party, you know, dominance of politics in America. I kind of think that's a bad idea. But if the other party is, you know, trying to end the entire system, you better be rooting for the Democrats. That's my view right now. And so Michigan, yeah, is a good example, and of the Republicans, you know, being, you know, election deniers and pretty much promising that they were going to fix the next election, next presidential election, if they got into power. And nobody wants that. I mean, nobody among the, you know, rational people, which is most of the people in this country, they don't want fixed elections. They don't want some darn group of people, you know, legislators in a smoke-filled room deciding who their electors are. So it was a natural result in Michigan, but an encouraging one, I think.
Meanwhile, we have to ask ourselves whether it's Georgia, a candidate like Herschel Walker. Well, that I kind of write that off simply because we're still talking about the South, but Ohio is coming very close to becoming the South, much like parts of Wisconsin in terms of the, you know, the political gerrymandering that goes on. But I will say that in Ohio, the thing that was a bit of a gut punch to me was that people didn't see through what a charlatan J.D. Vance was, that he beat Tim Ryan, and that, you know, a jerk face, you know, like Jim Jordan can continually be sent back to Congress. And so, you know, the old book said, what's the matter with Kansas? I think we need to change it to what's the matter with Ohio.
Yeah, it's just confounding because I thought Tim Ryan ran maybe the best campaign of any candidate running this cycle. I mean, he was really in the right place. His ads were good. His message were good. And I just don't understand it. And you know, J.D. Vance, who's owned by that Silicon Valley guy, Thiel, you know, so, who's he going to answer to? These right-wing techies in Silicon Valley or the people of Ohio? I think we know the answer to that one. And so that's a real disappointment. That race wasn't even close, Pat. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, I was disappointed that Mandela Barnes didn't win in Wisconsin, but that's like a one point race. I mean, he ran a good race and it was really close, but in Ohio, it was overwhelmingly them voting for the guy who's clearly a con artist. And so, and that's disappointing. And I was thinking about Jim Jordan too. You mentioned him and I'm thinking, how do you crawl into the mind of somebody who thinks that Jim Jordan is going to make their life better? I mean, why would you think that that's a candidate who's actually going to, you know, serve the people, figure out stuff? I mean, the guy's totally, you know, running a circus whenever and screaming at people and just, you know, trying to own the libs. I just don't get why anyone would think that's better for their lives if they vote for Jim Jordan.
Yeah. And so now we'll, with the minute we have left, turn to Georgia. Whether you think a runoff is good or bad, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. What is it that media can do to properly give coverage to this Georgia Senate runoff?
You know, that's a good question. All the horrible things about Herschel Walker, and you know, it would take you an hour to go through them all. I think most people know it, and they're ignoring it. You know, they're trying not to. So I think the media has to remind people of the simple facts that he's not only a danger to the people around him, but and mentally unstable, but doesn't know anything about anything. So I think the media has to remind us about the same stuff they've said periodically in the last year.
Stick to facts. That would be really something.
Nice.
All right. Mark Jacob, we'll do it again next Friday. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
Have a great weekend. All right. Coming up next, special guest sportscaster, UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher tells us about the weekend to come in Wisconsin sports. This is Up North News Radio. Six degrees up here on Lake Wissota. It was 66 this time yesterday. Seasons have changed. The fall colors have come in. And that then for people of a certain age like me and Dan, that the fall colors mean a touch of gray from his favorite group, the Grateful Dead. And we are thrilled to have him as our guest sportscaster for today. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Great, thank you. Great.
It is gray today.
It is, but we're gonna rise above that because we've got a very busy weekend ahead. As I told folks earlier, when we were configuring what this new morning show would look like, I jokingly made reference that we should have you on to talk about the weekend in sports, and you said, yeah. "Why the hell not?" And so not? Here we are. So,
Happy Veterans Day! Happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there.
To you as well. I saw you put up a note about your dad, a Marine, and
yeah, ex-Marine. I'm a Marine brat. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, that you see all those ads of Camp Lejeune, and we're involved with that as a family. My father died too young of leukemia.
Oh.
And, but we spent a lot of time as a family on Camp Lejeune. So it's interesting, but happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there.
Exactly. Dan is a Chicago product. You basically said you grew up in a tavern in Chicago.
Basically, we did. Parents own a bar, restaurant, bowling alley. Grandfather had it. So yeah, it's South Side of Chicago kid. But you know, I spent a lot of time in Wisconsin as a kid in the '70s, and I went on to Winona State to play football, mm-hmm. and yep. But I always wanted to be up north. I'm done with the city life for 30 years now. So
you get down once in a great while to catch a Cubs game, but otherwise you got a place upriver here on the Chippewa, which is pretty darn cool. And before we get into sports, you've been at UW-Eau Claire for how long?
I'm going to be entering my 10th year.
And in that time, how many national championships has UW-Eau Claire won?
We've won, in my time, 12.
12. 12.
Before
that, not bad. I don't know if we did 12 my entire college career there. So good on you. Appreciate that. You were kind enough to invite me down to Madison to watch the Badger basketball team take on the Blue Gold basketball team. And so thank you for that again. That was a great experience. And now the Badger basketball team is playing at American Family Field, formerly Miller Park, this weekend. The women playing Kansas State at 3:30, the men playing Stanford at 6:30. So first off, before we get to the Badgers themselves, what do you think about that little venue?
Oh, man. I tell you, I visited Miller Park. Oh, I say Miller Park. What's it called? American Family now, or whatever it is. Yep. I went there for the Cubs series around Labor Day weekend. What a fantastic ballpark. Not a bad seat in the house. The amenities are incredible. As much as I'm a Cubs fan and love Wrigley Field, that park's got it beat from an amenity and a viewership and just everything from the bathrooms to the concourses to the concessions. It's just a wonderful place. And I bet you those kids, the Badgers, both men and women, are going to have a great time in that experience and that type of venue.
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to be nice for them. Badger football heads to Iowa Saturday at 2:30. And then I got to ask you this about the Packers. They're at home against the Dallas Cowboys, 3:25 on Sunday. I'm going to go ahead and throw the grenade, Dan. Do you bench Aaron Rodgers?
No.
Come on. It's time for the Jordan Love era. Come on, let's do it.
No. You got to let this play out. He deserves too much respect on that. And that'd be embarrassing for the organization to do something like that. They wouldn't have done that to Brett Favre.
No, they wouldn't have.
I just think the storyline this weekend, more than people want to admit, is it's Aaron Rodgers versus Mike McCarthy.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So, I think Mike would like a little bit of a little payback, a little extra sauce on my ice cream. So, I think the Dallas Cowboys are finally coming together too, without Dak. And I don't see how the Packers are going to be able to defend against that offense.
God, can you imagine a 6-game losing streak?
It's called the Lynn Dickey years, right?
The Lynn Dickey. See,
no. I'm a Bear fan, man. I'm a Bear fan. I lived through the 70s with Walter Payton and everything, you know. But I always watched the Packers and Lynn Dickey.
We're going to look for the magic man. See if we can find another Mikowski to join us. And then they get a short rest. They go right to Thursday Night Football. Where are you on Thursday Night Football with that short rest? I've never liked it.
You know, that means less practice. I mean, one thing as an old football player or coach, as I was, it's less practice. You know, you go from one game right to the other, and everyone likes playing games more so than practices. So, you know, if you can get in the training room and get healed up, do your rehab, whatever you got to do to get your owies all fixed to be 100% for Thursday, you got to do it. And I also don't think from a labor standpoint that it's fair, but the NFL doesn't really care about that because this is a brutal game. It's a brutal game, and
it's a business built around a brutal game. Essentially. Meanwhile, in the rest of the NFC Norris, you got the Lions at the Bears and the Vikings at the Bills. Both are noon games on Sunday. That Vikings Bills game is going to be something to watch. I mean, that's
what's funny is, Pat, I know you and I've talked about this. You look at the state of Wisconsin. I'm a Bear fan, so everybody south and east hates the Bears. Mm-hmm. Everybody northwest Wisconsin, all that, they hate the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, growing up, I hated the Vikings. But I picked my football number for my whole life because I loved watching Fran Tarkington play.
Oh, yeah.
And he was little number 10.
Everybody of your generation, mine, wanted number 10 on their jersey.
Yep. But I'm hoping the Vikings lose. Packers, good luck. But my Bears are taking on the Kitties, so I'm hoping for a divisional win.
And then we've got a quick note on baseball. The Brewers don't pick up the option on pitcher Brad Boxberger, making him a free agent. It's way too early to say what any of this means because there's so many players who have to go through arbitration and everything. So we'll take that. We'll make note of Boxberger. He still might come back, just not at the $3 million that his option would have cost. And then finally, for the WIAC, when I looked at the football schedule, it would appear the big game this weekend would be Platteville versus La Crosse.
No doubt about it, because if La Crosse can win that, they will probably win the league. I know Whitewater's got a tough game this weekend too. This year's WIAC football league, probably the toughest I've seen it in my 10 years. And we're just beating each other up. Mm-hmm. There's going to be two lost teams making the playoffs when two lost teams never made the playoffs before. So you look at that, you know, it's crossover time. It's crossover time for all the high schools. What I mean crossover is that fall sports are ending, winter sports are starting. So there's crossover. It's a very busy time at high school and college level. We have 16 of our 25 sports competing right now. That includes postseason. Volleyball did lose yesterday in the NCAAs. Tomorrow we have men's soccer in the NCAA first round, and cross countries in the regionals. So it's a busy time all across this state for the WIAC schools and the WIAA schools.
Yeah, with all eight divisions playing their football playoff games tonight. So there is so much to watch, and we'll talk more about the results and previews again next Friday, Dan Schumacher. Thank you so much.
What's my closing song now, Pat?
Oh, we're still on Touch of Grey, but you're going to pick new Dead songs for us every week after this. Just started with the one I knew, the one grateful song I know.
The only top 10 song they had in the history of the band in 1987.
Exactly. So I'm going to learn a lot from here. All right. Go have fun. Work hard. Play hard. Enjoy the day, everybody. I'll see you back here next Thursday. Have a great weekend.